repeat the lines again. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani. Vak pranash chakshu shrotram atho balam indriyani cha sarvani. Sarvam brahma upanishadam. Maham brahma nirakuryam. Mama brahma nirakarot. Anirakaranam astva nirakaranam me astu. Tadatmani nirateya upanishat sudharmaha. Te mai santu. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Keneshitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena prana prathama praiti yuktaha. Keneshitam vacham imam vadanti. Chakshushrotram kaudevo yunakti. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manoyat. Vachoha vacham sau pranasya pranaha. Chakshushash chakshurati mucche dhiraha. Pretyasma loka damrita bhavanti. Natatra chakshur gachati. Navak gachati. No manaha. Navid mahanat vijani maha. Yathe tadanu shishyat. Anya devatad viditadato. Aviditadati. Iti shushruma purvesham. Ye nastad vyacha chakshire. Yad vacha nabhyuditam. Yena vaga bhyudyate. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yadidam upasate. Yan manasana manute. Yena hur manomatam. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yadidam upasate. Yat chakshusha na pashyati. Yena chakshugamshi pashyati. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yadidam upasate. Yat shrotrena na shrinoti. Yena shrotramidam shrutam. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yadidam upasate. Yat pranena na praniti. Yena prana praniyate. Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi. Nedam yadidam upasate. Yadi manyase suvedeti. Da brahmevapi. Nunam tvam vetha. ब्रह्मनोरूपम् यदस्य त्वं यदस्य देवेश्वथनु मीमांस्यमेव ते मन्ये विदितम्। If you feel you know it, you really do not know. It says, Naham manye suvedeti, no na vedeti vedacha, no nas yo nas tad veda tad veda, no na vedeti vedacha. Yasyamatam tasyamatam matam yasyana vedasaha avignatam vijanatam vignatam vignatam avijanatam avignatam vijanatam. This is the second line of number 3 where we stop now. It says, see, vijnata means it is, avijnatam means not known. By whom? Vijanatam, by those who know. Those who know that it is not known. Means those who know reality, who know God, those who know truth, they know that God cannot be known. God cannot be known means in an objective way. Just like we know this thing in an objective way, they know that God cannot be known in an objective way. God cannot be an object of our awareness. And vijnatam avijanatam. Avijanatam means those who do not know, they say God can be known. Or God is known in an objective way. That itself proves that they do not know. You cannot bring God within the grasp of the limited mind and intellect in an objective way. That will be like trying to take out the flashlight from the battery, the battery from the flashlight, and put it in front of the flashlight to see what brand of battery it is. Now, how that will happen? Is it Duracell or Energizer? Let me see. I'll put in front. So you take it out and put in front. So you take out, use this mind and intellect to try to know God. So you try to make God an object of the mind and intellect. So God is the one who is behind the mind and intellect, who is making it know. He's making the mind and intellect know whatever it knows, objective things. So you try to objectify that same God. It's not possible, just like it's not possible to take the batteries and put it in front of the flashlight. That is one reason why it is not possible. Because he is always behind making the mind and intellect, or giving them the power to know. Second reason why it is not possible is because the mind and intellect themselves are limited, and this thing is unlimited. How limited thing will know? Unlimited things are not possible. So the second reason, you see? So those people who claim they know, they say that, you know, God is known. Vijnatam. They are avijanatam. They really do not know. And those people who really know vijanatam, they know that it cannot be known. So are we in a wild goose chase then? Trying to know God? And as we call also God realization. I realized God. There is no such thing as realizing God. Oh, so what, then why all this camp? It is like this. It's a very good example. I always tell this real example because it happened to me. You know, in my ashram in Trinidad, in the kitchen,
You know these blenders we have in the kitchen. We're blending some coconut or something. So they have we have all these cheap blenders, you know, you buy for a few bucks. And then 2 times you blend the coconut, this thing burns away. So somebody told me that there is something called a commercial blender. Now, I also don't know about this. But because it burnt away, they told, no, you have to get a commercial blender. So I said, oh, there is such a thing, huh? They said, yes, you get one of those. So one man, he opened his jewelry store in a mall, big mall. And he wanted me to come there in that inaugural function in that store. So I went. While exiting the mall, I saw in a window of another store, commercial blender. So I thought to myself, now I see it in some way far from the ashram, and I'm here, and commercial blender is there, and we need it. But, I don't have any money, because I don't usually walk with money or anything. Then, when I came back, I thought maybe I'll send somebody or next time when I come back or something, I'll make some arrangement. When I reached the ashram, I have a habit, my watch usually I carry in my pocket and all. I take out my watch and I put it on there. Well, when I did that, to take out the watch, there was an envelope in my pocket. And there was sufficient money to buy that thing also. To buy that commercial blender. So, really speaking, when I was thinking I did not have money, the money was there all the time. It was there in my pocket. So, upon discovery that the money is there in my pocket, do I get the money or do I just discover that the money is there? Really, I don't get it. I already had that thing. You don't get it from anywhere. Already we have it. It cannot be brought. This is just a matter of discovery of something which is already there. This is exactly this thing called as moksha. We are actually looking for something which we already have. We cannot, if moksha was to be gotten from somewhere, by the same token of getting it, we could have also lost it. So if suppose you get moksha today, but you could very well easily lose it tomorrow. Because anything which comes also has to go. That is the nature of the universe. Whichever comes must go. You cannot outdo that law. So, jatasya hi dhruvo mrityu. Whichever is born must also die. This is the rule. So if you get moksha today, well, tomorrow you lose it. Just like every other thing. So the scripture says, no, we don't get moksha. We don't obtain or acquire, achieve any such thing. Really, the spirit, the reality which pervades this body is already free. There is a feeling that I am not free. There's a misunderstanding, wrong knowledge, that I am bound. That feeling has to dissipate. That feeling has to be gotten rid of. And that is gotten rid of by all these studies and camps and scriptures. See, the feeling is we are carrying all the time. And slowly, we're supposed to dissipate that, make it vanish. And what is left? The same self that was free all along. It was never bound. That is like, I was passing near a circus once. This is a true thing. And there was a huge elephant. And the hind leg, one hind leg of that elephant was tied with a thin rope like this to an equally thin post, peg, on the ground. But that was a very strange thing to me. Such a big animal that can tear down this entire building. So much strength he has. And this thin little rope and a thin little peg, and he's tied there and he's not going. He's not pulling out that peg and going. So I asked that circus, I stopped and asked that circus person, how come this big animal is being bound with this little, thin little rope and peg? He said, because when he was a baby elephant, we tied him with a fat rope on a big tree. So when he pulled, he realized he's tied. So he pulled a few times, and he realized that, no, this doesn't make any sense. Better I stop pulling. So he stopped pulling. So after he got trained with this big rope that I am bound, I'm tied, I cannot go. Then after that, we put that bug in his head that I am bound. Then little thin rope and peg is enough. Because when he makes a little tug there, and he feels anything on his leg, you know, doesn't matter how thin it is, he feels I am bound. So that is, now when they're taking him from circus to circus, all they need is a thin rope and a little peg. And they tie him there. But really speaking, he's not bound, you know. There is a feeling in his mind that I am bound. So that bondage is nothing more than a feeling. Now, what can a feeling do to Brahman? A feeling could ever bind Brahman. No chance. Brahman is always free, and no feeling could bind him. So what we have to do, the feeling which we have in our mind that we are bound, I am limited, you know, all this, and associated with that feeling, I will die, you know, I am so ineffectual in whatever I do, I am so unconnected to all beings. All of these feelings are connected to that wrong feeling that I am bound in this world, or I am such a, ineffectual being, so powerless, you know, all that kind of weak. All of these things are associated. So all of these different types of studies now, to get rid of them one by one, you know, we get rid of this feeling, that part of the feeling, you know, we chip away at this whole bundle of wrong feelings, because from one, another one comes. One leads to the next. And there's a whole, so many of them. So when we have one sort of complex, that leads to other complex, and everything becomes so complex. So one by one, we have to keep removing all of them with different types of sadhanas. So this type of sadhana will remove this thing. That type of sadhana will remove this wrong understanding. Another type of sadhana will remove that. Or, see, one of the simple thing, like there's agitation in the mind or restlessness in the mind, right? That is also bundled with all of these things that we have to get rid of. That agitation leads to restlessness and uneasiness. And so when we sit for meditation, for instance, look. So whoever is conducting the meditation, they sit straight, head, neck, back, everything in one straight line. Then for the next half an hour, no shaking. Well, you know how that is now. So the agitations and restlessness of the mind get transferred down to the body. So we say in the meditation now, first thing is, we will perfect the posture. The posture requires also no shaking. Now even to remove this one little defect, how much sadhana, how much tapas, how much effort is required to remove that first defect? Forget about Turiya and all this thing yet. end state and all. Such an elevated state. Let us see this little one first. So to chip away at this little defect, to get that posture straight and no shaking, what will happen? Oh, it is so difficult even for that thing. Because when you sit there, leg tells, please move. You say, no, I will not move. Leg says, please. You say, no, I have taken sankalpa. I will not move you. Then leg says, but I am paining. Then you say, well, pain. You say, but you may die. Leg tells, you may die. Then mind tells, no, nobody has ever died from a little leg pain. Then leg says, but why do you want to run the risk of being the first? So this dialogue goes on between mind and leg. And who wins? Leg. See? So then you move. So even to perfect this little, to remove this little defect, takes so much of. So how we have to go on removing all these defects one by one, until the person is able to sit there absolutely silent. And he's able to go deep inside and come to dwell in his state of quietude, which is his true state. All the other things outside will keep pulling, pulling, pulling. And it will not allow him to go inside. You see? So, all of them, they form this big bundle, which starts from this great ignorance, which is called as avidya. From that avidya, all of them come. And that avidya is what? I am ignorant of the fact that I am all the time mukta. I'm all the time free. That ignorance causes all of these things which we have to remove. It's such a big task. But you know, there are two ways to do that. One is, see this ignorance and all its offshoots, effects of ignorance. There are so many, we can go on chipping, 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 cutting off, you know, one by one. Or, find the source itself, ignorance, and just cut off that itself. Now, that is even more difficult. So what we say? We try to lighten the burden, cut off many of these effects of ignorance. And at some point, because you know the amount of effects of ignorance is so much, we'll not be able to deal with all of them. So a relative amount we remove from our life. All, you know, calm, growth, mud, love, all these different things. And all restlessness, agitation. So many things we try to remove by different types of sadhana. But eventually, we'll have to tackle this ignorance directly. You see, it is like this. Ravan is there. And all his soldiers are there. So there's Ravan and Meghnad and, you know, Kumbhakaran and so many of them. All soldiers. So when we go to Lanka, we don't go to Ravan directly. First we remove all these foot soldiers, you know. And so many of them, then Kumbhakaran gets removed also, Meghnad gets removed, so many of them. Then finally, Ravan also will have to be tackled. But you can't wait until you kill every soldier, every Rakshas. We hunt them down in whichever crevice they are hiding and kill every Rakshas, then only kill Ravan. It doesn't happen like that. We kill a great number of them until they become relatively weak, and then we go straight to Ravan, exactly like that, and this ignorance. Otherwise, to find out, some Rakshas will have gone to Patal, run away. You know, hiding somewhere. We cannot find all of them. So here, same. Bring a relative amount of quietude and respite means renunciation and all that of so many of the things that we are tied to. And when we can manage, we tackle ignorance directly. And the way to tackle ignorance directly is to get knowledge of the nature of self to remove this ignorance. So, this is the process that all of us are supposed to follow. When we go there, what we are actually doing is removing ignorance, not bringing knowledge. We cannot bring knowledge. Our whole task is to remove ignorance. See, we cannot make sun shine. Right now, there's a cloud that is blocking the sun. All we can do is remove the cloud. Who can make sunshine? Cannot make sunshine. It is already shining. We cannot make knowledge appear or Brahman reality appear. That is not possible. Brahman is always there. We can remove the ignorance which is blocking. So, the person who says that I have acquired knowledge or I have acquired, reached Brahman and all that kind of thing, he has not reached any. He doesn't know. See? Now, in the next verse, it tells one of the techniques. This is a nice technique. I want you to see that. Of, you know, on this path, one of the techniques of removing this ignorance. Because now the whole effort is only to remove ignorance. That is all we can do, really. Remove ignorance. Remove the cloud. Sun is waiting to beam through. And it is being blocked by this ignorance, cloudy ignorance. See this nice technique I want to show you. Pratibodha viditam matam amritatvam hi vindate atmana vindate viryam vidyaya vindate mritam. Vidyaya vindate amritam. It's supposed to be amritam. Sanskrit grammar makes it mritam. Now, by knowledge, immortality is obtained. This is language. Because of the limitation of language, it has to be stated like this, right? This is the last phrase of the verse. By knowledge, immortality is obtained. Huh? I was reached. Now see this thing. There is absolute reality in all of us already there. It cannot come, cannot go. It has always been there. It has not come from anywhere. That is the nature of the universe. There's absolute reality everywhere. But at the same time, there appears to be ignorance of that reality. It's, I don't know it. I think myself to be not absolute reality, but I think myself to be a finite being, limited being, sorrowful being, miserable being. I hold myself to be so miserable and so ineffective, ineffectual, so weak, so constrained by so many small little limitations in this world. Now, it says, by knowledge, this ignorance is removed and immortality abounds. Immortality is already abounding. It's just, I don't know. So by knowledge, what happens? The ignorance is removed. Knowledge is the antidote to ignorance. There's only one antidote to ignorance. That is knowledge. And we're not talking about we're not talking about any small little piece of knowledge, because ignorance also is not small. Remember, your ignorance is not only of a few things. Your ignorance is of totality, isn't it? I am ignorant. See, beyond our galaxy, what is there? We don't know. So it means my ignorance stretches to limitless proportions also, isn't it? My ignorance is limitless because I do not know what is there in the outer limits. Or if there is an outer limit, I don't know anything actually. So how big is my ignorance? Oh, that ignorance also is limitless. So we are talking about a limitless knowledge that can remove a limitless ignorance. That limitless knowledge is what is to be acquired. Means knowledge of the limitlessness of reality. So much I have to expand my intellect to get such limitless knowledge, to remove such limitless ignorance. When that is removed, that limitless ignorance, then knowledge of Brahman, reality, abounds. It is always there, just right now being blocked off. So by knowledge, vidyaya, by knowledge, immortality is obtained, means immortality will shine. Immortality will just be revealed. Right now it is just being blocked. And how do I acquire that knowledge? And the first phrase is given. Very nice phrase. Pratibodha viditam matam. That knowledge is to be considered to exist in every instance of intelligence or knowing. Oh, that is a very involved phrase. Let me explain to you what that means. See. Right now, I am aware of all of you. You are aware of me, right? In your mind, I am nothing but a thought or a group of thoughts. I consist of only a group of thoughts in your mind. See, for instance, you will say, or you'll have in your mind, Swami thought, orange thought, small fellow thought, right? Not big fellow thought, small fellow thought, Trinidadian accent thought. How many thoughts will be in your mind about whatever you are seeing here? They are all, it's only a bundle of thoughts. So I can be represented to your mind only as a bundle of thoughts, because your mind can only deal in the currency of thoughts. Isn't it? They cannot deal in anything else. Then there'll be some distant thought, because you'll say, well, he's sitting some distance from me. Like that. So all of these thoughts together are there playing in your mind, and that is how you're experiencing me. And do you know that is true for every other experience in the world? Everything in the world represents itself in your mind only as thoughts. Now, this is first stage. It means in your mind, the whole universe represents itself only as thoughts. Then second stage, what are thoughts made up of? Well, thoughts are nothing but modulations or modifications of consciousness. Consciousness taking on different shapes and forms is called as thoughts. That is like when the projector beams a mass of white light on the screen. That white light on the screen takes on different shapes and forms. So if you remove the film, what you see on the screen? Only bright white light. But if you put the film in front of the white light, that film breaks up the white light into so many little forms. You remove the film, only one white light. In the very same way, our mind is breaking up consciousness into all of the little forms and things which you are seeing. But the mind is really the thing that breaks up consciousness into little pieces. The mind is like a prism. How a prism breaks up light into seven different colors. There's a prism here, and you send white light through the prism. What you get on the other side? Seven colors. In the very same way, our mind is capable of breaking up consciousness into countless little forms, shapes, names, colors, so many things which you experience. That is what the mind does to consciousness. So mind is that instrument which fragments consciousness. And they all appear as thoughts. When mind fragments consciousness, all the fragments appear as thoughts. So a thought is nothing but a fragment of consciousness. That is the idea. Thought is a fragment of consciousness. Now, is there anything in your mind beside thoughts?
No.
The mind is made up of only thoughts. And all of these thoughts are fragments of consciousness. So the mind is nothing but consciousness. Now, if the whole universe is represented to your mind as thoughts, and all thoughts are nothing but consciousness, then what is this universe? Consciousness only, isn't it? The whole universe is nothing but consciousness. That is the meaning of Pratibodha Viditam Matam. That consciousness is to be held to be at the root of every instant of knowledge. So when you know me, I am represented to your mind as a thought, and the thought is made up of nothing but consciousness. So I am nothing but consciousness. Or every other thing which you know is nothing but consciousness. This is the idea. Now, if you go on reflecting on this, the whole universe dissolves in your mind, it dissolves into consciousness. So, not only am I made up of consciousness in your mind, but see, between me and you, there's a space. That space is also a thought in your mind or not? That space is also made up of consciousness. Now, what is not made up of consciousness? That will be the question. The answer to that is, there'll be nothing. Every single thing is made up of consciousness. So the world is nothing but consciousness. Consciousness, he consciousness. It abounds everywhere. So as far as your mind can stretch, you know, far as you can experience anything, that is only represented to your mind as thought, and thought is nothing but consciousness. There is only consciousness in the universe. On the screen, there is only light. There is no Amitabh Bachchan or Gabbar Singh there. There is only light on that screen. Because if you go and you touch there, you don't touch anybody, isn't it? You can't touch anybody. And when that train is coming, there is no need to dock. The first time you saw a movie, you did not duck. I ducked. That train was coming. I ducked. I thought, oh my God, I'll get run over. One man, two fellas went to see that Jurassic Park, you know. And when that, what is that? Dinosaur. When that dinosaur was coming, this man hid under the seat. So this other one said, "Arey bhai, movie to hai, it is only a movie. Why are you hiding?" He said, "It's a, I know it is a movie, but does that dinosaur know it is a movie?" But it is all made up, whatever is there on the screen, all made up only of light. There is nothing else there beside light. This whole universe, there is nothing beside this one consciousness. Therefore, really, there is no need to be afraid of anything in this universe. See, when the student gets closer and closer to this understanding, then the student also becomes fearless. That's why all the rishis are fearless. They don't fear. If you want to, I don't know how many of you would have met our Gurudev, but if you want to really discover what is fearlessness, you should have seen him. Fearlessness, 100%. There is nothing which he was afraid of. See, we will always be afraid of. You know, if I make such comment, then there may be political repercussions, social repercussions. Maybe this thing may be there, somebody may say this, or they might censor what I have said and all that. But he was an absolutely fearless being. Because the person who comes there to realize, but the whole thing is like light, you know, the whole thing is only one unified mass of consciousness. His name was that actually. Chinmaya. Chinmaya means one unified mass of consciousness. The whole universe is fashioned, modeled out of this. The whole universe is carved out of this one unified mass of consciousness. But this thing is as much consciousness as the space next to it right here. Everything in the universe. You may say that their texture is different. You know, this space is harmless, but this thing might harm me. But that is only another thought in your mind. And this one is solid. Solidness or solidity is a thought. That thought is also made up of consciousness. Like this, we dissolve the entire universe, or you reduce the universe to its lowest common denominator. When it is reduced, the lowest common denominator of the universe is consciousness. I do not know if you want to use the word lowest. It might be the highest common denominator of the universe. That is pure consciousness, chinmaya. And this is the meaning of pratibodha viditam matam. In every instant of knowledge, or every instant of knowing something, one should come to know that it is consciousness which has just modified itself as that particular thing which you know. That is the idea. From that state itself, immortality comes, or immortality abounds. Amrita tvam hi vindate. The amrita, the immortal state, is reached through this process by knowing that in every state of knowledge, or every instant of knowledge, is only a modification of consciousness. So one is in constant awareness of that consciousness. Atmana vindate viryam. Strength, power is acquired through this realization of Atma. Or Atma here means same thing as consciousness. Strength means what? Right now, all of us feel we are so weak, you know, so ineffectual. Means I never feel that I could make any difference in this universe. Nobody feels that he could make a difference in this universe. Or I'm so unconnected to anything. But from the realization of this knowledge, we realize that I am... See, every wave who identifies with the entire ocean acquires the power of the whole ocean. But a wave by itself, if he thinks that I am a wave, what he can do? Nothing. But if he knows that he is the ocean, he's part and parcel of this vast ocean, can swallow all the whole earth, isn't it? See, one little tsunami in one little corner wipes out so many people and all things. Little tsunami, airplane floating. Such power the ocean has in just a little tsunami only. But a wave by himself feels that he is so ineffectual, so weak. So realization of my oneness with the entire universe brings great strength. Viryam, vidyaya vindate amritam. And through that knowledge comes such immortality. Means it sends away my feeling that I will die. Look, even a little bit of physics, if you study, they say nothing in this world is created, nor is anything destroyed. There is constancy in the universe. This is one of the law of the universe. Everything is constant. You cannot take away anything from this universe, nor can you add anything in this universe. That itself should tell from physics. That I cannot come from anywhere, nor do I go anywhere. I have always been here and will always be here. That is called as amritam. Amritatvam means I am immortal. All things in the universe is immortal. Do you know? Nothing in this universe can be created, nor can anything be destroyed. People say, Swamiji, what do you mean nothing is destroyed? But there was a table here last year. Now table is vanished, burnt to ashes. So it's destroyed. Not destroyed. Think, na? This is immortality. Everything in the universe is immortal. Not only some things. Some things mortal, some things immortal. All things are immortal. If we say the table has disappeared, let us inquire a little bit. Huh? Think along. But this is there in implied in the verses of Bhagavad Gita as well as the Upanishad. Before the table came into being, where was the table? The table was in tree. That is what we say, na? So the carpenter, let us say carpenter made it, made that table. He went and he got this wood, brought it here. The form of the table was in his head, na? In his mind. So that form he took and he transferred it onto the wood. And then you had this table. Okay. Now, before the form came in his head, where was it? Because we say, but he was not born with this form of table in his head. He acquired it from somewhere. Huh? Where did he? It was there before it came into his head. It was there in the cosmic mind. Huh? What do you call? The cosmic mind. That is the mind of Ishwara. It was there in the mind of Ishwara. And from the mind of Ishwara, he caught it in his mind. And then he transferred it onto the wood. Now, whatever things are there in the mind of Ishwara, those things are permanent. One, it is always there in the mind of Ishwara. It is not that Ishwara suddenly thought of it. It means Ishwara did not think of it before. So that was missing from his mind. So if something is missing from his mind, it means something is lacking in Ishwara's mind. So if something is lacking in Ishwara's mind, it means his mind is not absolute. His mind is limited. Because he's missing a few things. If he's missing a few things, then he could be missing a few screws also. Isn't it? We'll see. Because now you don't know what he's missing. Nah. So it has to be admitted that in Ishwara's mind, nothing is missing. It means he knows everything. Everything is already there in his mind. His mind is limitless. And every possibility. Now see. Suppose the carpenter makes a table with three legs. And the next time he makes a table with four legs. It means both the table had to already be in Ishwara's mind. The carpenter cannot be said to bring something new in the universe. Because then he would have a power which Ishwara did not have. No. He cannot be seen to bring anything new. He'll have a power beyond Ishwara then. So the table with three legs have to be in Ishwara's mind. The table with four legs have to already be in Ishwara's mind. One table with a defect. Different from a table without a defect. That defective table also has to be in. Any variety of table that he brings, this fellow creates, this carpenter, that variety already has to be in Ishwara's mind. And why not in Ishwara's mind? His mind is infinite. An infinite number of tables has to be in his mind. You see, you haven't thought of the meaning of infinity. Anything you think about, there's infinite variety. And that infinite variety has to already be in Ishwara's mind. What nature of Ishwara? So this Jiva, he is just catching one of the infinite number and he is making it manifest on this wood which he has gotten from the tree. Like that. So, all things are already there in Ishwara. Everything is already existing. And nobody in this world can create anything new. What we are doing is that which is there in Ishwara's mind is called as unmanifest. We are pulling it from unmanifest and bringing it into manifest. It stays for some time in manifest and again goes back into unmanifest. So nothing is really being created nor destroyed. Things are just coming from unmanifest into manifest. And from manifest is going back into unmanifest. So when we destroy the table, what we are actually doing is sending it from manifest back to unmanifest. And this process is true for the entire universe. This is why we say the universe is coming from a state of unmanifest to manifest. Right now it is manifest before our eyes. Then it goes into pralay. Laya and unmanifest is one and same. It goes into, I mean Mahapralaya, it goes, the whole thing goes into unmanifest. But the meaning of the word laya is goes from manifest to unmanifest. This is why in Sanatana Dharma, we do not have concept of creation. Srishti, Sthiti, Laya. This is what we have. The word Srishti doesn't mean creation. Western people went into India and read these words in Sanskrit and they gave this English translation. What is the English translation? Creation, sustenance, destruction. Those words are so flimsy and do not even come close to the translation of the Sanskrit words. Means they could never capture the meaning of the Sanskrit words. Srishti means just to usher something from one state into another state. That is the meaning of Srishti. It doesn't mean creation. So the thing is in this state, which is unseen, unmanifest, and from that state, I usher it into a state of seen or manifest. That is the meaning of the word Srishti. But now, in the Western philosophical systems, there is no such concept. Right? They don't understand anything like this. So when I go there now and I see this word, the only word which they have is, this thing was not there, so I create it. So now how you'll translate? Srishti means creation. That is how they'll translate. And this is what has happened to our whole philosophical system. All of us have gotten caught up in this Western way of thinking and talking and all that also. You see? And sometimes we cannot do without that talking like that. So Srishti means to just usher from one state to another state. Here it's a state of manifest now. There it was unmanifest. I usher it. So the carpenter who catches that idea of the table from Ishwara's mind, he now takes that idea, which is still unmanifest, it is in his mind, and he brings it into a state of manifest by transferring it onto the wood. Then it stays manifest for some time. Then later on, the table becomes old and this and you burn it. Now it has gone back into state of unmanifest. You see? And this is the whole process constantly. So the whole, all the planets and everything is also undergoing the same process. So now science is also telling the whole universe which we see will collapse into some black hole. Something of infinite density. And then something happens inside there. There is some big bang. Kaboom. And again it starts manifesting. And again it collapses into this black hole. And it is what we be. See what? They are reinventing wheel only. We are telling no. It goes into state of unmanifest. And again comes manifest. And again goes into unmanifest it goes. But it's not created or destroyed. So nothing in the universe is created nor destroyed. Everything is already there and just manifesting, unmanifesting, manifesting, unmanifesting like that. Constant, limitless, timeless process is going on. That is called as immortality. So everything is immortal. There's nothing in this world which is mortal. Mortality is one of the other delusions which we have. Remember, I was telling you we have so many delusions. Mortality is just one of the other delusions. There is no such thing as mortality. Immortal, everything. Are look now. If Brahman is immortal and everything is made from Brahman, what can be mortal? Huh? So the change which we are seeing is nothing but that is like the water of the ocean forms a man, forms a wave, forms an elephant. The same water and again dissolves into the ocean and keeps forming so many things. Look, no matter how many things it forms, eventually, let us say 100 years of forming this, forming that, dissolving, forming, dissolving. After 100 years, you go and you count, the water of the ocean is still the same. Water. Nothing has gone anywhere, no? Nothing has come from anywhere. Same amount of water will always be there. So the same constant one unified Brahman is there. And from it, all things are manifesting, dissolving, manifesting, dissolving, manifesting, dissolving, like that. That manifesting and dissolving is what we call as Leela of God or Brahman. That is his Leela. People say, but Swamiji, I'm suffering. Are you suffering also is Leela. That is a whole part of the Leela. Why not learn to enjoy the Leela? This is another problem of human beings. See, games is meant for everybody to enjoy, na? Games are meant for everybody to enjoy. That's why we have game. We enjoy. But today, game has turned into sports. Games have been transformed into sports. And where there is sports, there is one team that will lose. And when they lose, they cry. Big men and women. Have you seen them? On television, you must see. Grown men and women, when they lose, they cry and cry. Where is the enjoyment now? They cry, they are disappointed, they leave it, everything. And not only that, now there is match fixing. All sorts of, so games have turned into sports. And when it has turned into sports, it means the element of enjoyment is forgotten. Other things are now, have now replaced that. So there's money to be made, there's name to be gotten, there's fame to be gotten. You know, there's contracts to be signed and all those things. So the games have transformed themselves into all of that. So enjoyment aspect is gone. So now, this is exactly what is going on. The human being, his Leela of Bhagwan is going on. It is his, you know, play is going on. So that play is only for enjoyment only. But the human being comes here and he forgets the enjoyment aspect and he gets caught up in, I should get this before that fellow gets it. And I should outdo this one. And I should hoard how much I want for my... And he gets caught up in all of these things. And now the whole samsara only becomes... Means the whole Leela only becomes misery, misery, misery. But if we learn to see the play of the Lord going on, it is only joy and joy and joy. One has to learn that thing. We have to give up this habit which we have taken up. And the species is so wonderful. You know what we are good at? We are good at, instead of untying the ropes around our neck, we are good at putting another one. So many already have tied. So instead of removing them one by one, every day we keep putting. See how we are really, it's amazing. What is our solution, human being solution? He has his hand over the candle like this. Candle is burning. Yeah? Flame is there. And he's like, ah, it's burning. What to do? So what his solution is? Get some ice and put it there. This is his solution. And only one thing to do is? But we have one problem and we get a solution such that the solution itself becomes a problem. This is human species. One solution leading to another problem, another solution leading to another problem, and then string of problem down the line. You see, anything we do, see, even now with modern medicine, that is true or not? Huh? Yes. And if the pharmaceutical companies do not do that, how they'll survive? They have to do that only. One should lead to the next, and one lead to the next, and then. And we are caught up in this thing, all caught in this. But the one who is a wise person, even in the midst of all of that, he can see the play and think it is just all Bhagwan's Leela going on. Then he enjoys that also. But the human being who doesn't see this whole drama, he gets caught up one by one by one, gets caught. All right. Now, there might be one more verse. There's one more verse in this section. We'll see tomorrow morning. But let me tell you, when this section is over, there is a nice story. Very wonderful story, which demonstrates how we are all caught up. And also, the story also indicates how we can come out. What really is going on in the story is whatever we have been seeing here, the same philosophical idea is being taught through a story form, in a nice story. Very interesting story. Famous story. We'll see that tomorrow morning. Okay. Let me also tell you a little bit about Chinmay Mission Trinidad. You know, just south of Florida here, there the string of islands. So Trinidad is one of those islands. The country is made up of two islands, Trinidad and Tobago. So in 1997, I was still in India. I was posted in Noida. So somebody from, perhaps here in America, somebody asked Guruji to come to Trinidad. But in Trinidad, there is no Chinmay Mission. So Guruji usually doesn't like to go where there is no mission already there, you know, because what type of arrangements, what yagna deal, and you know, what they expect, and he doesn't know. So he doesn't like to go. So he left here and he came to Delhi. And I came from Noida just to have his darshan. So he remembered I am from Trinidad. He said, hey, somebody was just asking me to go to Trinidad for yagna. But I don't want to go. Why don't you go there and do something? He just said like that. Well, you know, guru's words are guru's words, you know. They should not be taken lightly also. I immediately packed up my bag and left. Now, there's nothing in Trinidad. No Chinmay Mission is there, nothing. So I just came there. And this is 97. Within short time, this mission just started. I was also thinking, how it is coming, you know. But Gurudev had gone there in the 60s, 1965. And Gurudev had put some strong sankalpa there. I could tell because these things were just happening like this, mushrooming. And by this is 97. By 2002, that ashram was also already built, and Guruji came to inaugurate that ashram also. So from 2002, Guruji has been coming to Trinidad, and mission is just going on. Now, we have on the island a high school, three primary schools, and six preschools, kindergartens. And our high school, every year, gets 100% passes at the board level. So the high school is doing better than every high school on the island. Because Chinmay Vidyalaya High School, wherever we have them, and Chinmay Vidyalaya, wherever we have them, has the secular part of the syllabus, but we have something called a Chinmaya Vision Program, where all philosophy, culture, history, you know, scriptures, all things are taught. And we also teach Sanskrit to all children. So from kindergarten, Sanskrit is being taught. So, by Gurudev's grace, all of these things are just happening, mushrooming across the island. So now also we have started camps last Easter, which just went by. We had international camp. Many people from here went as well, from different centers and all. So you can look forward to those things. Just Google Chinmay Mission Trinidad, you will know what is happening. And so the next program, big program which is coming up, is Swamini Vimalananji, which I was telling you about this morning. She's coming in February. So you can tell others. So it's a very busy center and growing fast. We need about 5-10 Swamis. If anybody is planning to become a Swami, please come there. Acharyas, we need so many. We cannot keep up with the work. And now see, in our schools, we go on teaching all the Balvihar program, which is called a CVP. Now we need so many teachers to teach them. if you have spare time and you want to come and volunteer also, you're most welcome. Ashram itself has accommodation for 100 people. Different types of rooms. AC, non-AC rooms, family rooms. Different types of rooms are there. Also, many times families just leave. For example, now our Lakshmiji, Sukumarji and all, they had come. Families just leave where their center and they want to take some time out and just come and chill out. Because Caribbean is meant for chilling out, yes. So you just come and chill out. That also, you're most welcome anytime. Huh? Okay. This is what is happening there. And we have nice people also. They love to take you out and show you Trinidad and eat some of the delicacies on the streets. Famous delicacy on the streets in Trinidad, it is called a doubles. There's one little puri, special Trinidad puri. It's not like puri which you know. On that puri, you put some chana and special island spices, chutneys and different types of hot things on the chana. And then another puri on the top. And then you grab it like this and you eat. Doubles it is called. Even though it is a one, it is called a doubles because it has two. So get me a doubles, did we say. And then you can have it, you know, hot, medium, or mild, like that different. You can tell which type of chutney you want there also. Some coconut chutney, one dhania chutney, different type of chutney will be there. So people eat like anything and they bring when they are coming as well. So come sometime. It is there. All right. To chill out, yes. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.